Welcome to Sex Afflictions and Porn Addictions. I am your host, Craig Pera. I am the founder of the Mindful Habits System. You can learn more about us at www.themindfulhabit.com. And this is a podcast to help you, men, you brothers, to create healthy sexuality in a great life. It's also to support your partners too. And today we're going to give some really, really excited. I have my brother from another mother here. I'm going to let him introduce himself. Adrian, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Adrian Stobren. I'm from Poland. I work in the Mindful Habit team since 2013 as a recovery coach. And in my own country, I'm also a psychologist and I have a postgraduate degree in sexology. And today we're going to talk about something that's very exciting for me, which is the topic of sexual health.
Yeah, thank you. There's so much to learn. Mm-hmm. to learn on this topic. And let's start. Thank you for being here, Adrian. And what my hope is today is you guys who are listening, the goal has to be sexual health. Too many people are stuck on sobriety. I'm trying to not do something. It's a valiant effort. I support that effort. You know, I want you to be healthy, you to be happy, however you define it. But, and this is like a but, if you don't have a model, a framework for sexual health, and if you don't move from sobriety to sexually healthy, I'm sorry to say you're only going to find yourself returning to old bad habits. And so I hope that this gives you some ideas to start thinking about, what do you want this part of your life to look like? This part of our lives impact our mind, our body, our spirit. It just touches all three of those important areas for a lot of people. So let's start with the basics, Adrian. What is sexual health?
So sexual health is defined as a state of physical, emotional, mental, and social well-being that is related to sexuality. So it's not just the absence of disease, dysfunction, or infirmity, which means that it's not about what you don't do, right? It's not about not doing the thing or not having a problem. It's about creating well-being in this area of life, mental well-being, emotional well-being, physical well-being. And for sexual health to occur, it is required to have a positive and respectful approach to sexuality and sexual relationships. And possibility for having pleasurable and safe sexual experiences that are free from coercion, discrimination, and violence. So in order for that to happen, also all sexual rights of people should be respected and protected and fulfilled. So this is a general definition of sexual health. And as we see, there are couple ground rules there that I think are pretty straightforward that can help us guide ourselves towards healthy sexuality when we are recovering from compulsive sexual behaviors, right? So those three main ground rules that I've seen there are safety, consensuality, and pleasure, right? It was mentioned that for healthy sexuality to occur, there has to be possibility of having pleasurable and safe sexual experiences free of coercion, discrimination, and violence. That's the key part. So those three ground rules are really, really important. And I think we need to reflect on how our actions are violating those ground rules, if they are violating them in any way.
Yeah, I look forward to, you know, I was thinking about those ground rules and I was thinking, obviously, about when I wasn't in integrity, when I was lying, compartmentalizing, and gaslighting. So I'm looking forward to, you know, contrasting, you know, kind of where I am now and where I was then to give people some examples of what these words means in practice. So let's start with the first one. What does safety mean in this context?
Mm-hmm. Right. And this will be not a written definition from some kind of workbook. This will be my understanding of those ground rules. So guys, always take it with a grain of salt. But my understanding of it is that safety means that we are physically and emotionally away from harm, right? We are free from harm in terms of our integrity of the body. So there is no, you know, no physical attack that's happening on our body that could hurt you or somehow destroy the integrity of your body. You're not going to catch a disease, right? Because of that contact. And you have also emotional or psychological safety. So there is no coercion, manipulation, and abuse involved in this behavior. That's psychological safety. That would be my broad definition of what safety means.
And so if someone is out there, you know, lying and cheating on their wives and aren't practicing safe sex, that would be an example then of not only is the person exposing themselves to the threat of disease, they also run the risk of bringing that threat of disease back home to their partners. And so that behavior would violate that safety component. Is that a fair understanding?
Yes, I think so. First of all, that would be a behavior that is unsafe for that person that's involved in the behavior, right? Because they can catch an STD and suffer because of that, and their body will be affected. So there is no physical safety there. But also safety of others could be affected if they are not informed or if we have unprotected sex with them, right? I would say there's another rule there of consensuality that this behavior could possibly violate as well. If the other person doesn't know that you have a disease and you have sex with that person, that really makes it hard for that person to be fully kind of consenting to the behavior because they don't understand what will be the consequence of that behavior for them.
Well, they don't even know, right? In our example, right, exactly. The partner doesn't even know. So she's not, and typically we work with men and, mm-hmm. and women. Tell me more about the consensuality. Is that mm-hmm. does that mean someone's in integrity? They're being honest? Well, I guess it can mean a few things, right? It can mean, I'm thinking of the examples of the guy who, you know, and we've got awesome clients who are trying to better themselves. Mm-hmm. And some of the patterns guys fall into through misogyny, through poor training, through, you know, not holding themselves to a high standard. You know, I work 6 days a week. I demand sex. That's my reward. You know, that's what I deserve as a man. And there's an element of coercion, and the wife's trying to honor her obligations. She's trying to do what she thinks, you know, he wants. But truth be told, she's being pushed. She's, you know, boundaries are blending. There's no mm-hmm. like no, you know, if the woman says no, the guy stops, right? He's, you know, mm-hmm. he stops. But there's that you know, it's all on a spectrum, right? So there's is that what this is? This, you know, consent, like does that coercion or pushing blur that consent boundary? Is that a fair understanding?
In my understanding, that would be more a breach of a safety rule, you know, of sexual health, because there is no emotional safety if we try to coerce a person or manipulate a person. So that's, you know, psychologically unsafe and potentially abusive, I would say.
Yeah.
When it comes to consensuality, for me, that means conscious agreement, right? Yes. Conscious agreement and, you know, conscious and in that sense that this person has all the information it needs and it has the maturity and brain power also to make that decision. And why I'm speaking about that is because there is this big debate around, you know, sexuality around teens and children. And it's obvious for people, you know, that children cannot give full consent because their brains and their personality isn't developed yet. And it is, you know, they don't know what will be the consequence of the behavior. So it's hard for them to make like a fully consensual decision. And that's why any type of sexuality, like speaking about obvious things, but any type of sexuality with children is unhealthy and is breaching this rule of consensuality there. Or if you are fully abled and you're having sex with a person that is, for example, having some kind of mental
disability. Yeah.
Yes. Intellectual disability and so on. That will be also breaching that rule of consensuality there. Of course, there is discussion. There are different positions on that. But to make it crystal clear, in my own understanding, consensuality means fully conscious agreement of a mature, developed person. And it cannot happen if that person doesn't have full view of what's happening. They don't have all information about the situation. It cannot happen, obviously, that person says no and the other person doesn't care and keeps going, right? Or if that person says nothing and doesn't show any sort of interest, but the other person keeps going, right? Or if that person is unaware or under influence of some kind of substance, like maybe a drug or alcohol.
Right.
That's why the most of those behaviors that are breaching the rule of consensuality are punishable by law, because they cross the boundaries of other people very violently.
Yes.
And they take advantage of those other people. So that would be, and one more thing of some behaviors that are non-consensual quite often is in the sexual realm. If someone is a voyeur and looks at people that are unaware of it, right? Like puts webcams or something, you know, in their homes. Or if someone is exposing themselves to others, right? They didn't consent. They didn't agree to have a sexual show at the moment. And yet it happens, and it can be quite traumatizing for those people. So all those behaviors are breaching that rule of consent in terms of sexual health. Now there are certain behaviors that are, you know, some people consider them an ethical issue that I'm not sure if they are breaching the rule of consent. For example, I don't know what you think, Craig, in terms of what I explained and this rule of consent around pornography use if the partner disagrees, right? If the partner disagrees but the other person watches pornography, would that still be a breach of consensuality in your mind?
If one person is using pornography and the other person doesn't know about it, would that breach the consensuality?
Doesn't know or doesn't agree.
And as I've done my research and I've tried to educate myself, I've seen in how consensuality is traditionally focused on some of those hard and fast rules. No means no, right? Violating that obviously violates that consensuality. But I do think, you know, as that definition broadens, and I don't know if it's fair to include it under the World Health Organization's definitions, but I do see a violation of that consent. And the reality is because so many of our clients, and we've got awesome guys and their wives are awesome. We've got such an amazing community. I'm so proud of the work that they are doing. The wives didn't sign up for this. They didn't know. They had absolutely no idea that this person had this secret life. And throughout this secret life, the guy's gaslighting the wife and blaming her for their sexual issues. He's unable to perform. She feels insecure, you know, that he can't perform. And you know, there's so much conflict and there's so much, blame that gets internalized on behalf of the partner. So I absolutely do see that as a violation, as I understand the word, as the word practically and you know, my day to day, I do see it as a violation. Does that, right? Did I explain that well?
Yes, I get your point. So it would be a bit similar to what I described with STDs, right? That the other person is not fully aware of what's happening to the other side, and hence they cannot really make an informed decision of whether they want to engage in sex or not, right? There is no physical risk. So safety, I would say, it's not breaching the rule of safety in that sense, right? This person is practicing solo sex and watching pornography is quite safe unless you're doing that in a public space or you're harming yourself while doing it. But if the other party doesn't know, then in that broader sense, I can imagine how that would bring that breach that rule for consensuality. If the other party does know, though, I don't think that would breach the rule of consensuality as well. I think that hiding that fact can take away a crucial piece of information for certain people that could help them decide whether they want to engage in sex or not at the moment. So I see your point definitely here. And the last rule that that I'm seeing in our bullet points today is pleasure. So that ground rule of pleasure. And I think that's very often gets misunderstood, misconstrued. There is this, resistance towards seeing pleasure as integral part of sexual health. So here, you know, what I think is important is to just recognize that healthy sexual behaviors are pleasurable, which means if you are suffering after your sexual experiences, if you feel worse than ever after what happened, right? Or during
shame,
the act,
shame, right?
It can be your own judgment and shame about the behavior, but it can be also, you know, that the behavior itself was crossing some kind of boundary or line for you, right? And because of that, it wasn't pleasurable. Or you force yourself to do something that your body doesn't want or need at the moment. And because of that, it wasn't pleasurable. Like in case of pornography use, for example, for people who are compulsive with pornography, I think that mainly breaches the rule of pleasure, actually. And why do I think this way? Because compulsive pornography use is not done because you are horny and want to have an amazing sexual experience. It's done because you're feeling anxious, because you're angry, because you're frustrated, because you want to run away from your feelings. That's how I understand compulsion, right?
Yeah.
So, because you do that and it doesn't come from the need of your body, you are oversaturating yourself with certain impulses, and it just drain energy. And it I would say, for me, at least in my experience, it was definitely breaching the rule of pleasure. It wasn't pleasurable. I felt depleted. I felt depressed. Porn binges themselves were very unsatisfying, actually, but I felt this compulsion, this must, you know, I have to do it because I don't know what to do with my feelings at the moment. And this is not what my body needed. This is not what my body wanted. So there's a big difference between, you know, experiencing even some kind of erotica or adult material, you know, as a form of pleasuring yourself, maybe with your partner, preferably with your partner, right? And as a way to escape from yourself, from your feelings, from your trauma, from your anger, from your low self-esteem, I would consider that breaching the real rule of pleasure for sure. And I'm thinking, Greg, as you're listening, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was thinking about a couple of my behaviors as you were talking historically. One was the adult bookstores. When I would go to the adult bookstores and either masturbate in one of the video booths or hook up with somebody. These were dark places. And while there may have been a pang of pleasure, the overall experience left me feeling dirty, left me feeling disgusting. It would take me days to recover from the shame. The shower couldn't wash off the filth and the smell. I remember it being a very, very shameful activity. It wasn't pleasure seeking. It wasn't even, I don't think you could even call it hedonistic. To me, it fell in that category. And I'll talk about this from the porn perspective, self-harm.
Yes.
The net result was self-harm. It wasn't me feeling good, enjoyable. It was left me feeling, you know, horrible about myself and feeling shame. And so the same was true about pornography. It wasn't a pleasurable act. And I see a lot of guys, you know, they come in and their mindset is, you know, they're addicted to pleasure. They can't, you know, stop with the pleasure. And there's this notion that this is hedonistic behavior. But when they really unpack it, as it was for me and what you described, it's not pleasurable. I would actually rub myself raw, if I'm being honest, because of the frequency and the grip, the death grip. I would actually, you know, cause trauma to my penis.
So safety as well.
Yeah, safety as well. Yeah, excellent point. And so it was It was actually self-harm. It is. I'm not saying it's the psychological mechanism behind cutting, but I certainly was hurting myself under the ruse of pleasure. But it wasn't pleasurable at all when you step back and take a look at it.
Yeah, it's almost like it's more not hedonistic, but more masochistic, right? Or it's like punishing yourself.
Yes.
Very often, deep down, we feel we don't deserve right anything good. Yes. So we do things that harm us.
Yeah, and I wondered, you know, by a show of hands out there in whatever land you are, you know, listening to this, are you in the pleasure category? Or are you actually causing pain? You know, is this a, you know, if you're here, you know, that may be alone an indication that your mind is trying to get your arms around what you're doing. But think about that. You know, is this pleasure seeking activity? Or are you actually causing harm to you physically, to your body, as I talked about with the death grip, or feeling shame and feeling dirty and disgusting after you've done this act? You know, is it making your life better? Is it making your life worse? And that's why I like having this conversation, Agent. I'm glad you brought it to my attention, because I think the more that we can help people, give them an idea and as a framework for healthy sexuality, like, so I'm researching for my speech that I'm giving in 2 weeks. I'm going to the Advancement in Men's Health Conference in Big Sky, Montana. I'm lecturing to physicians. I'm in the research. I got stacks of paper, you know, everywhere. Shocking. One of the studies I read by Dr. Joshua Grubbs, there is no gold standard. The research is conflicting. There's no uniform definition, for example, of pornography. There's no uniform definition of sexual health. The sample sizes are too small. They're not segmenting them by religion, by morals, the areas where we know people are impacting. Like, we never got trained on this. No one taught us about sexual health. Like, it is the most, one of the most important aspects of being a human. Before science, the only way to create another human, something everybody does who's given, you know, had a child. And yet we know so little. And I think that we have to start teaching our boys and our girls earlier about these principles. And the dads and moms listening, we got to do a better job teaching our kids, because if you don't teach them, porn is going to teach them. They're going to learn it, you know, someplace else. And you know, we need a framework for sexual health. That's my long-winded way of saying that.
Sure. And that's what we're trying to offer based on our clinical experience and on some ground rules that I think are pretty common sense if you look at them. I do like that the pleasure is included, because that means that pleasure-seeking behavior is someone is actually not engaging in self-harm, as you said, using sex for seeking pleasure. It may be a healthy behavior considering, you know, those ground rules, but it may be still, you know, an ethical conundrum for that person, right? That because they feel that need to explore their sexual life in a different way, but they don't agree with those needs and desires they have inside. So there's another area of ethical conflict there that needs to be navigated, but an ethical conundrum is a separate topic from what we talk about here, which is sexual health, I think. One thing that comes to my mind, I have one but to what you said, Craig. I agree with everything, besides one thing. What about guys that are, you know, engaging in some kind of kinks or fetishes, and that's why they feel shame afterwards and they hate themselves? And even though the behavior wasn't probably unpleasurable or wasn't something negative per se, but because they have this judgment, they feel shame afterwards. Would that be also crossing the rule of pleasure for you?
How they are experiencing that kink or fetish would be, I want to be very, very careful here, would be crossing the rule, because they're not getting pleasure from the act. They're feeling, you know, deep, shame. So for example, religious shame. And I'll tell you a quick story. I had a client, a beautiful man, a pious man. He loved feet. He had a foot fetish, Adrian. So he spent years in religious-based counseling that shamed him, that demonized his love of feet, and basically brought him to low points where he had been suicidal. His wife's feet were completely off limits because that was the devil and that was the sick fetish and that was the perversion. And I remember, I was at the beach. I set healthy boundaries. I normally don't take these calls. There was something about the guy in the text messages back and forth that said, I want to talk to him. And to make a long story short, God loves feet. Like, you, what is wrong with loving feet? What is wrong with loving your wife's feet? What is wrong with massaging them and enjoying each other's company? It may be a little different than what you'd expect as a Christian, but just asking him questions and saying, hey, are you sure this is bad? Like, let's get the book. Let's do it. Let's crack open. Show me why did they say it was bad? Why did they say it's harmful? Where's the devil here, man? Like, now listen, here's what happened. Because they demonized his fetish, and you know, fetishes cannot be eradicated or erased. They must be channeled and directed. So let's start with that reality, channeled and directed. Mm-hmm. You damn it up, you go crazy. And so because of the therapy and counseling that he received, his wife's feet became off limits. Mm-hmm. So what did he do? He took it someplace else. He took it someplace else on the internet. He paid people for feet pits. He lied. He cheated, right? And terribly regretful. And the solution wasn't. And I told him, I said, listen, I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. Okay. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to tell you what is. Here's the science. Here are some articles. I think I sent him an article written by Galen Faust and an article by Aaron. What's his name? Great researcher. Anyway, if I remember, I'll put it in the comment section. But an article on kink, an article on fetish, and to make a long story short, he and his wife lived happily ever after. You know, every once in a while, he reaches out and he calls me, and he still remembers that phone call where I, like, instead of like, oh yeah, let's fix this problem, I was like, tell me again why that's a problem. And it was the first time anyone in his life had offered him that perspective. Every professional that he went to see, that's your sex addiction. That's the disease right there. That's not normal behavior. That was demonized. All he needed was a little nurturing, a little redefining, a little channeling and directing, and of course, healing the trauma from this poor wife had been through. Because all these secrets, all the lying over the years, I will never, ever, ever forget that man. And I hope he's listening, because it was such a, like, to me, like, wait, they told you what? Wait, why did they say that? Where's the basis for it? Where's the teaching? Give me the dogma. Give me the scripture. Give me, like, help me understand it, because I don't understand if a man loves his wife's feet and he enjoys them and gets sexual pleasure mm-hmm. from looking at them and rubbing them. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, that's what comes
to
mind.
So I get that. I this is a very powerful story, Craig. Thanks for offering that, because it shows how his behavior had potential for meeting all of those ground rules of safety, consensuality, and pleasure, if his partner is up to that, right? And then you have safety, consensuality, and pleasure. But because of those internalized judgments and because of certain perspectives, it was definitely crossing the lines of healthy sexuality, right? And just the perspective shift that you offered allowed the behavior to come back to those ground rules, to make it consensual, right? There is honesty, there is consent of both parties involved, right? Both adults are deciding that they want to experience that. Awesome. So you have consent, you have safety, because there is no lying, coercion, manipulating, no harming of others. And you have pleasure that comes out of experiencing your sexuality in a non-judgmental, happy, and ethical way, actually.
I get choked up thinking about that case. and thinking about, I remember it either he didn't send me a, he sent me a picture of them together. And then he said, you can't see it because I cut it off, but down below, she's wearing sandals and she got her toes done. She had never been able to do that before because that was the object of his disease. And again, they waist up there. I don't know where they were, just someplace fun. I keep thinking beach, but I think I was at the beach. Anyway, I don't remember exactly where they were. But he told me later on that she had sandals on and she no longer felt like dirty. She no longer felt disgusting. She was able to receive his love in a healthy, in a constructive way, consistent with those three rules, safety, consensuality, and pleasure. And listen, you know, Adrian, that's that we get that all the time. You know, we get that all the time. I get the fetish, you know, I got my fetish brothers. I call them my fetish guys. Their behaviors have been demonized. Because they've been demonized, they have like stuffing a sausage. It starts coming out in squirrely ways that are unhealthy, that do violate those boundaries. When they're able to understand that part of themselves and accept that part of themselves and not diseaseify that part of themselves or demonize that part of themselves, they're able to channel and direct that energy into creating safety, consensuality, and pleasure. And it's one of the reasons it's, listen, people get mad when I talk about this because I always get a comment. How dare you criticize 12 steps, or how dare you criticize, this treatment philosophy. And as I'm preparing the speech for physicians, I'm just going to be me. I'm just going to speak my truth. I'm going to support it with evidence. I'm going to share with them, you know, the problems with that model. And this is something we should talk about. There are genuine areas where people are being harmed, and the Fetish Brothers is definitely one of those categories where people are being harmed by their treatment providers who are diseaseifying or demonizing that behavior. And it's really sad.
Yes, I hear you on that. I think that we need to elevate our standards, you know, of providing good help, good service. That means reading research, being on top of, you know, what are the current, realizations in the field, what is the consensus at the moment, and, you know, that connected with our own field experience or clinical experience can create, like, I would say, quite a good perspective on the topic. And I believe that, you know, when it comes to sobriety, if you focus on sobriety itself and you want to be free from addiction, then you get away from something, but what you're left with is nothing. It's like if you want to learn how to eat healthy, you don't starve yourself to death. You practice healthy eating every single day, right?
Yeah.
And there are some ground rules for healthy eating, a little bit clearer and easier probably than for sexual health.
Yeah.
But still, you know, like if you want to have a healthy sexuality, you want to experience it in a way that's really amazing, fun, joyful, ethical, then you need to practice it. And that means including those rules in your life, learning about sexuality, educating yourself, and just sometimes switching or changing perspectives a bit. So I definitely feel that this is such an important field. And you guys, if you ever struggle with your sexuality, ask yourself, is my behavior breaching those rules? Am I crossing any lines, you know, when it comes to sexual health? In which way I am crossing them? Is this an ethical problem I'm having, for example? Always reflect on your behavior first and then decide, you know, what kind of help you want to receive. Do you want to have help from people who are trained in the field, who have scientific knowledge, who have proven tools that we have in the Mindful Habit? It would be a bit self-serving now, but we have that in the Mindful Habit. Or do you want to have treatment that is based on an outdated, frankly, philosophy?
Yeah, no, thank you, Adrian, for that. And we're going to continue this conversation. Guys, let me know in the chat if you are interested in a sexual health program. Like Adrian and I have talked about this, and there's so many basics to learn. Okay, B, here's the model for sexual health. Ask yourself, is it healthy? Is it not healthy? That's a great start. That'll take you places. And I think it's a very important question, and or it's important for people to define that question so they can keep asking themselves in their journey to healthier and healthier and healthier and healthier. I also think having this foundational knowledge and understanding these principles and understanding the ethical conflicts and understanding all the different things we talked about, like this is the area that we as people know least about, and it is one of the most impactful. It's certainly impactful for creating a sustainable, happy, healthy relationship. It's certainly, you know, anyone who's listening to this podcast maybe can appreciate the destructive nature of their sexual energy when it's violating these rules and violating their ethics. How nice would it be to have a model to build sexual health and understanding some of these concepts and building on top of it? This, the more we talk about this, Adrian, the more I think that sexual health 101, you know, course for men feels more important more than ever.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Any parting words? Thank you, Adrian, so much. So important, brothers. You've got yourself a framework. In the comments or description, I'll include the link to the World Health Organization definition and any other resources that we want to share with you. I'd like to say that sobriety is 20% of the solution. Less than 50, less than 25, not doing something is only a tiny, tiny, it's a stepping stone to creating sexual health. And being someone who's in alignment, you know, in integrity, and it being safe, it being consensual, it being pleasurable. Any parting words, my dear friend?
Thank you, Craig, for awesome conversation as usual. Yeah, I would say, you know, stepping away from something can provide space for understanding yourself better, but that's it. Everything else need to build upon those three ground rules. So remember them, look at them, ask questions about them. You can disagree with us. I welcome any discussion around it. And just make sure that you're not demonizing and punishing yourself with how you perceive yourself. Always go back to, you know, what works, what is common sense, what is supported by science right now. Thank you very much. Take care and have an amazing day.
Thank you, everybody. Hopefully this helped you on your journey towards sexual health. Dan, we got an awesome team here at the Mindful Habit. So if you are struggling and any of the concepts in this podcast resonated with you and you're interested in getting into a structured program, we have three different options: our core training, our group intensive, and then both Adrian and I do some one-on-one work. If we're able to make it work in our schedules, we're blessed to be almost booked most of the time, but please don't hesitate to reach out. At a minimum, we'll point you in the right place. www.themindfulhabit.com. Thank you for watching or listening to Sex Afflictions and Porn Addictions.